All right, welcome to class again. This class was a bit difficult for me to know how to pull together. I've always had CLE, and I grew up with it in school, and that's what I've always taught. But each curriculum has its own unique way of teaching phonics, and there's no way that's more right than another way. I guess not. I've never taught anything else, so I don't know. But I'm so used to CLE, and so I wasn't sure how to teach it and give good pointers to all of you without making you feel like CLE is the right way. But my dad would say, well, don't apologize. He's a school rep for CLE, and so he'd be proud of me for advertising CLE, I guess. But anyway, hopefully you can take some good ideas home with you. And phonics and learning to read is my favorite thing to teach. I love teaching learning to read. It's every year I'm just amazed. It really, to me, teaching learning to read is just like a miracle, and I love watching that in children, watching it open up their minds to a whole new world that they have no idea about when they come to school. And I'm so amazed that when they come to first grade, how little they know. And within a couple months, they're able to pick up words and read. And I just love watching that sparkle in their eyes when they figure that out. So, yeah. What is phonics? Phonics has to do with sound and auditory discrimination. It is a method of reading by learning the sounds of letters, groups of letters, and syllables. Now, a little bit plainer language. Think about a letter as being a symbol. Each letter means something, and each letter has its own sound, just like other things have sounds. What are some things that make sounds?
Ducks.
What does a duck say?
Quack.
Quack. All right. We teach children very early sounds of things. They learn that a cow says moo. They learn what a tractor sound is. Little girls out of super young age learn what a baby sound makes. And they learn that very young. And think about letters in the same way. That's how we teach phonics. Each letter means something. They see something, and they associate a sound with what they see, just like how when they see a picture of a duck in a book, they know that the duck says quack. And letters are just the same. They see a letter, you teach them what the sound is by whatever means you need to, and use your imagination for that. There's all kinds of fun ways to help them with that. They learn to associate that letter with a certain sound. And some children obviously do learn differently. It's harder for them to remember. Last year I had a kindergartner, and it was very, very difficult for her to remember the sounds of the letters. I wasn't sure she would ever remember them. But she needed a lot of repetition. She definitely learns by just doing it over and over and over. And by the end of kindergarten, she was doing great. So, in short, phonics is breaking a word apart into specific sounds and then putting it back together. Really, we're using phonics every time we look at a word, and we're not exactly sure how to say it. It's a new word we've never seen before, and we look at the sounds or the letters, and you don't subconsciously realize what you're doing, but you're really using phonics by looking at the letters, thinking about what sound they make, and putting it back together. All right, the three parts in the reading process are mechanics, and that's supposed to say recognizing and pronouncing letters. I'm not sure I messed up there, but anyway. Recognizing and pronouncing letters. Think about a mechanic. When they're working on something, they take it apart and put it back together. Comprehension, understanding the meaning of words and sentences. And it is kind of easy to think that after you've taught a child how to take a word apart and put it back together, and they know what the word is or says, that, oh, they've learned how to read. Comprehension is just as important or more important. If they don't comprehend what they're reading is really pointless to a child because they're not figuring it out, and that comes later. And the better they know how to read, the easier it is to comprehend when their reading is very short and jerky and it's harder for them to comprehend, I think, sometimes what they're reading. They spend so much energy and time figuring out what the word actually is that sometimes I wonder if they're actually comprehending what it says until they have it all put back together. And then the analysis, the mental response to what the reader has read. And that is, what do they feel when they read? What do they think? What do they feel? Does it make them happy, what they read? Does it make them sad? What feeling do they have with it? Teach that letters are like pictures for the sounds. Talk about the letter and how it looks. Does it have a tail? Does it have an eye? That's often when we learn the letter I, talk about that little dot up at the top. That eye is looking at you. Is the letter straight? Ask them what they think it looks like. Children have such great imaginations and they love to figure out what letters or words look like. Practice the letters and sounds using pictures, just like you show little children picture books, picture of a cow or whatever, pictures and books, and you tell them what sound they make. Do the same with their letters. I think it's a lot easier for them, a lot of children, especially if they learn by pictures. I'm very much of a picture person. Pictures help me to remember. And if they can have something to associate letters with, that helps a lot. Rhymes. CLE uses rhymes for teaching their letters, and we go over those rhymes over and over and over. Motions. I like to do motions with rhymes. That helps too. And they think it's great. Teach the difference between the name of a letter and the sound of a letter. I think it was, I don't know, I had been teaching a couple years, and I had this child that he would ask him what letter, he'd write up the letter O, and I'd ask him what it was, and he would give me some random sound, like it wasn't even the right sound. Or it was the other way around. I would say, I'd write up a letter, and I'd say, what sound does this make? And he'd say, D, and it wasn't a D. And he had no comprehension as to what the difference was between a letter and a sound. That there was a name for it, and then there's a sound for it. Until one time, I was talking to his aunt, and she said that he was at her place after school one day, and she asked him, hey, what letter did you learn today? And he didn't have any clue, and so she started listing the letters off, or some letters off. She was asking him questions, and I think he said some sound, like instead of saying the name of the letter, and it just hit me that he just didn't know the difference between letters and sounds. And so I really started talking about that. This is the name of the letter, and then this letter has this sound, and that seemed to help a lot. And suddenly it just all clicked, and then he was fine. I was to the point where I was very worried about him. I didn't know what to do with him because he was not getting it. And then suddenly the light bulb came on. Make the students aware of voiced consonants and unvoiced consonants. And one way to do that is just by having them hold their hand on their throat. The letter P, the sound for P, is unvoiced. P. You don't feel anything. Ah. Let's just all put our hands on our throats and say the sound for A. Ah. You can feel the vibration. And the first time that I ever do that, I love doing it the first time because their eyes, you can see it in their eyes, are, oh, yeah, you use your voice for it. So I talk about that with almost every letter that, or with every sound, that which, is it voiced or is it unvoiced? And they learn how to answer that question. Stress the importance of vowels. I always make a big deal about it, that the vowels are the very important letters. No word, you can't have a word without a vowel. And so every word has to have a vowel. Practice blending skills to make words. And depending on what curriculum you use, you might do this, you might not. Start with compound and 2 to 3 syllable words. And I call this blending fun in my classroom, and they love it. We do it every day. And so I have them stand up, and so basically I would say sandbox. What's the word, Tina?
Sandbox.
Sandbox. Kitten.
Kitten.
Yeah. Anyway, and so we do that, and it starts out very simple. If with it just being compound words, it's fairly easy for them to figure it out. And then it does get harder, moving to words with 3 to 5 sounds. Drop. Somebody give me the word.
Drop.
Snap. Yeah. And a couple years ago, I was at a teacher meeting where the lady talked about using your fingers, the finger method for this. Snap. And I think it was it last year or the year before was the first year I kind of started doing that. And I was just amazed at how much it helped. Like, yeah, I don't know, it just seemed like they were thinking about how many sounds it was. And especially when we were at the very beginning, when it was just three-letter words. P-I-G. You could say, what was the first sound? What's the middle sound? The ending sound? And it just, that really seemed to help. Do things as a group, and then with the individual. It builds confidence rather than embarrassment to the student who is still trying to get the light turned on. And I found that over and over again. If you do things together as a class, it just helps the ones that aren't as confident or aren't getting it. I've seen children get pretty embarrassed over not understanding how to do something or not getting it. And if you ask a student a question and they can't get it, ask somebody else. And yeah, don't make them feel like they're dumb because they can't figure it out. Start by sounding out words together, then have the students do it individually. Often I'll write up a list of words up on the chalkboard, and we'll sound them out together as a class. And that way there's not any one student feeling singled out who's not quite getting it. And you do have to be careful with that, because eventually you have to figure out who's not getting it and who is. So eventually you do have to have them do it on their own. But I try to save that more for if they're just doing it with me by themselves. And then later on, doing it in class individually is not as big of an issue. Practice spelling often. Spelling tests to me are very, very important. It helps me to know if they're actually figuring out how to sound out words and put them back together. And I'm pretty helpful in spelling tests. Maybe I'm too helpful, but especially at the beginning of the year, I say a word over and over and over and sound it out with them and just really try to help them get it. If you have wall charts, if you have letter wall charts up, ask them, you know, okay, the first sound of this word is S, which letter up on the wall has that sound. Just be helpful, and then as they get more confident, they will get it themselves. It'll be easier for them. Teach students to break apart words, or sound them out, the words during spelling. Just be very helpful with that. You can even sometimes have them do it together. Sometimes I'll say the word, have them as a class sound it out, and then tell them, okay, write it down. Make use of wall charts and flashcards. Using a chart to jog their memory is not cheating. I used to be, when I first started teaching, I was a little bit leery of that. I don't know, I just was afraid that it was, if I had too many charts up on the wall and they would use them for tests or whatever, I was like, well, how do I know if they're getting it? And different teachers have talked about that over the years. But it's fine, like, especially if it has pictures or whatever, it just helps to jog their memory. And I'm amazed at, after a while, you realize they're not even really using them anymore, but they're still there if they feel like they're in a pinch. Practice a lot. In first grade, there are so many things to just, you do over and over and over. Maybe that's why some people get tired of teaching first grade. I don't know. It can feel very monotonous and just, you do the same thing over and over. But that's how they're going to get it. And so you have to practice. The more you practice with a student, the more confident and fluent they will be with reading, and it will make them feel like they're getting it. Just reading words over and over. We do phrases. We start out with word flashcards, then phrase flashcards. So it's just short. It's words put together in short phrases. And I make them practice them over and over and over. And there's different ways you can do it to make it so it's not monotonous. Have them do it together in pairs, or play a game with the flashcards, lay them down on the floor, and have them walk around the room saying them. And it depends. Can't always do some things like that when you have multiple grades in a classroom, but try to make it fun for them. I'll even sometimes time them on phrase flashcards. It's a little bit harder than doing just word flashcards, but they still like it because it's different. Use word lists, victory drill books, word boxes. How many of you have ever used the victory drill books? Do you like them? I've never used them. I hear people talk about them, but I don't know anything about them. I've just heard some people say good things about them, so I put it on the paper. Some of you like them, some of you don't. Okay. What's the pros to them? Or are there none?
I like starting after Christmas. I don't know when anybody else starts them, but I like starting them after Christmas when the first graders have most of their, a lot of their sounds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of their word stuff together. And I think it just gets them to recognize the words quicker.
Mm-hmm.
To where when they actually read it in their stories, then I can tell a difference in their comprehension then.
Mm-hmm.
Because they recognize the word quicker. But then you have to be careful because there's students then that under time pressure.
Yeah, and I've had some
then
of those.
You have to just kind of work with the student.
Mm-hmm.
Because some students, I've lowered the amount that they have to get in a minute before they can move on. Or,
mm-hmm.
Just to give them a taste of victory or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was your opinion, Rhonda? Yeah.
Part of it, I don't know, with CLE, I didn't feel like it was really necessary, and that's what I taught mostly.
Mm-hmm.
And I
they have the word boxes in CLE,
and
so that.
That's stressful enough for some students.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. There's one student in tears over the victory drill, and I don't.
Yeah.
Which maybe I pressured too much, because
mm-hmm.
I love to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I also think it's good to use them in second.
Once they're a little bit more confident,
maybe because they are more fluid and it's not so much sounding out, and it's just they need more practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In CLE, they have word boxes that they're timed on every single day, and so with that curriculum, they do have that. And yeah, you do have to work with each student on that because sometimes it's just a timer issue. It's not that they can't read, but just the whole timer thing, they freeze up, and I'm pretty sure I was probably one of those because I don't like timed things very well. It's bad enough having a clock when you're teaching a class. Have students practice alone or in pairs material they will be reading orally in class. Kind of helps them if they're doing it together in a small group or just even by themselves individually. When they get to class, they'll feel just a little bit more confident. They know what they're getting ready to read, what they're going to be doing. All right, over on the next page. Just some tips and games. Instead of pencil practice, write letters and words on chalkboard. You can have them go up to your chalkboard or whiteboard, whatever you use, and practice up there. Last couple years, I've struggled with doing that a little bit more because I've had big first grade classes, and to try to squish a whole bunch, I'll sometimes just divide them up into pairs or whatever and have them do it that way, but it can be kind of messy and loud to have them all over the chalkboard, but it is a diversion for them. Make Q-tips sweat and use them on chalkboard instead of chalk. Usually my chalkboard is chalky enough. With white chalk, that works pretty good. You just
dip a Q-tip in the water and then have you write the letter on the chalkboard with that.
It kind of makes a dripping mess on your chalkboard, but it's fun. And it's different. Give students foam or magnet letters to make words. I have a set of their foam, but they have magnets on the back, letters, and they just love using those. I have a magnetic chalkboard, which is really, really handy, and they love to do that. That's something that I'll often have them do in their spare time, is do that. Write letters and words in pudding. How many of you have ever done that? It's always a fun thing that my students love doing. I usually only do it once in a year because it's a mess. Yeah, there have been some years I've actually done it in the classroom, just on their desk. I'll lay out a piece of wax paper, tin foil, and give them each a big dollop of pudding on their desk, and then they use their fingers to make letters or words in that. And then they get to eat it, and they think that's great. But it can be a really big mess, so beware of that. Form letters out of Play-Doh. My children love Play-Doh, especially, was it last year, I think, that group, they just loved Play-Doh.
Anyway, I have a basket of Play-Doh, and you can each take one, and if you want to sit there and mess with it, use it as a stress reliever or whatever throughout the day, you can. But I like those small ones. They're perfect to, if you want to have them, keep a container of it in their desk and tell them, okay, get out your container of Play-Doh and make. I use it for math, too. Math or for letters. So that's always a fun thing that they like to do. Another thing that I often do fairly quickly, actually, when we're starting to sound out words is making a slide. And write a song at the top. And it's easiest to do this with words that are all voiced sounds. If you do it with unvoiced letters, it's a little bit harder. But we always talk about a slide first. I say, well, how do you go down a slide? Do you stop, you know, every little bit on a slide? No, when you start on the slide, you go down. At least most of them you do. And so that's what we want to do when we're sounding out a word. So first of all, we'll just say the sound. And then I say, okay, well, now we're going to actually go down the slide and we're not going to stop. So and do that a couple times. And I can almost always see the light bulb come on. They actually said a word while they were doing that. Show and tell. You as a teacher bring an object to school that begins with the same sound as the letter they're learning. Let them guess what it could be before you show them. And I think I said something about this yesterday, that children love surprises. Bring a paper bag with stuff in it and set it beside you while you're teaching. And sometimes it can be a distraction, but they love being surprised about what you might bring that day. Another thing I've done one year, actually I've done it a couple different years, ask them the night before to bring something. I'll just ask one student, I'll write the letter that we're learning the next day on a 3x5 card and say, okay, take that home and find something that begins with that letter for tomorrow and you can bring it. And I kind of like to make a big deal about it and make sure that nobody else hears, and it's kind of their little surprise that they're bringing the next day, and they love it. And I usually try to make the If I know I'm going to be doing it that year, then I'll make the parents aware of it at the beginning of the year just so that they know what's going on and they're not wondering what's up. You can play I Spy in the room, finding things that begin with the letter they're learning that day. There's usually lots of things in the classroom that begin with the sound that they're learning, so you can do that with them. Another thing I do is write words on a card. And ask them questions.
give them time to read the card first, make sure they know what it says. And then I might say, who has the paper that tells something that you put on your foot? Okay, and then I tell them to stand up and face the class and say what the word is. Who has the word that tells us what you might see? Swimming in a pond. What is it? What word tells us what you see in the sky that moves very fast?
It's a jet.
Okay. So that's just something fun that they like to do. You can bring a small treat that begins with the letter they're learning. And I don't do that very often because after a while it gets cumbersome and, yeah. And I want to let you know that I don't do something major for every letter. There's lots of days where I do very little or nothing, but these are all things that I have done in the past. Have them cut and paste pictures out of magazines that begin with that day's letter. And that can be good for them, just looking through a magazine and making them focus on what the pictures are, making them think about the sounds. They have to figure it out. I mean, you can give them help, but kind of helps them to focus on what they're doing. And they love, along with that, they love cutting and pasting, and that's good for them. Write letters or spelling words with sidewalk chalk outside. They like doing that if it's nice weather out. Another thing I've done, draw lines, the headline, midline, and baseline with a permanent marker on a Ziploc bag. And this did not work very well this morning. I tried it, and I used the wrong kind of paint. If you use temper paints, it works a lot better because it's more watered down. But I draw the lines on it for them, and then you can either use your finger or a Q-tip and make the letters on the bag. And usually with temper paints, it's watery enough that it makes a line. Like you can see the back of the bag coming through. And that's just that I've done before. So, we have lots of time. What are some ideas of things that you've all done? I would love to hear some new, fresh ideas. Anybody have anything they want to share or things they've done in the past? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I've done that. I often do that in kindergarten. Last year, actually, we made enough and then passed it out to the whole school, and that was really fun for them. There's enough classrooms, and I had enough students that I paired them up, and they each got to take a big basket of popcorn to each student, so that was fun. Yeah, with teaching kindergarten, it almost makes it a little bit difficult because in kindergarten they learn all the sounds and letters in kindergarten, and then they do it all again in first grade. And so it's kind of hard to know how much to do in kindergarten and what you repeat or do in first grade.
Another thing I've done, if you it's hard to know a little bit how much you can do that if the grandparents are around. Invite the grandmas.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And then have them do maybe exercises that you've done with them, like say rhymes, mm-hmm. Just things, and then they treat grandmas with
something.
A little snack that all starts with a G.
Mm-hmm.
They love it. But then if you don't have all the grandparents around, I've had people pick out, let them pick.
Oh, mm-hmm. That would be a good idea.
Or something like that. Some of those things are fun for them.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them a chance to show their grandmas that mm-hmm. we are learning.
Yeah. That would be neat.
I'm an inexperienced teacher, so I was wondering, what is the best way to teach sounds, as far as, like, do you say this is buh, or do you say this B makes the buh sound?
When I teach the rhymes or the letters, we always start off by saying S says s,
mm-hmm.
s like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that way it makes them think about what the name of the letter is and what sound it is.
Oh. It's important because if you miss it, they can get so confused.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know the names.
Yeah.
I do it a little differently, but I usually, when they learn the sound, I don't worry too much about the name.
Mm-hmm.
And then when, or you won't even to read anyway,
mm-hmm.
they do it daily. They don't learn the capital letter with the lowercase
mm-hmm.
letter.
Mm-hmm.
And so then when they learn the capital letter and their penmanship, then is when I tell them what the
okay.
letter is.
Mm-hmm. I know, CLE does not actually talk much about teaching the name of the letter, but for some reason, that's just been my way of doing it. Like, I found it the easiest way. It kind of cleared things up in my mind or something. And so I've always been pretty picky about teaching the name of the letter, but you don't have to. Anything else? I feel bad we're not taking up the whole class time.
Another thing I found in the comprehension part of it
mm-hmm.
is when they start reading their stories. Like, when they first start reading it, like, they get their first reader or whatever, I have them take turns reading a sentence, and then I read it to them with loads of expression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then they have to, as a class, repeat it back
okay.
to me, like, with the expression I used.
Mm-hmm.
And it's way overdone. But
but you have to overdo it in the beginning so that they
get
to the point of,
it.
Yeah.
And I think that helps them that they learn how to think about what they're reading so that they know what expression to use. Because then you have it kind of helps them when you get to the student that just reads it. The cat sat on, you know, think about what you're reading. You're not just reading it out.
Mm-hmm.
What
put
words,
feeling
what
into
words
it.
What are making you think of doing something? Or,
mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.